Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, bound car, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing,
testing. Hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. You'll turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. Welcome to the Dean Richards Show. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards today. I assume he's off gallivanting, living large as he does, although it was fitting that he does introduce me in my opening there because I am filling in for Dean today. Be with you until about, 11:45, and then Northwestern basketball will be taking over the WGN airways. But until then, we've got a jam-packed show. It was much more jam-packed on paper than I thought it would be. I was under the impression I was going to be on until 1 for Dean's full show. So I actually had 5 pounds of bologna ready to stuff into a one-pound bag. So now I'll have to cut that into 3 pounds of bologna.
If you want, Jim, you can just do the rest of the show in the bathroom. I mean, why not? You're here. You'll be here as it is.
I know. I might as well just, yeah, in fact, yeah, if my guests, in fact, that's a good idea. I'll just do it from there. I'll just stay in this, because people can watch online. So I'll just stay here in the studio and pretend. It feels like I'm pretending anyway. Thank you, Sam, for that good idea. Plus, there's really good echo in that bathroom.
I was going to say the acoustics are nice.
Yeah, very good. Dave Schwann.
Happy New Year, man.
Hey, good to see you. We didn't talk on New Year's, right?
No, we didn't.
No.
I haven't seen you since we did the remote out at the Paramount Theater.
Right, and Sam Panionovich also
Sam
here.
Sam was there, yeah.
With the sports today, too. Good to see both of you. We really had a fun time, and that 12 Days of Christmas still...
Oh, that was...
Five golden rings.
Who brought that up?
I still love that. Hopefully that's going to be a Dean perennial.
5 gold rings and 7 Schwannies.
Seven Schwannies. And Sam, what did you have? 6 somethings?
6 geese a-laying.
6 geese a-laying.
But I was before you, and you kept stealing my thunder. I was 6 geese a-laying, and then you went all
acapella. Well, I mean, I had to do something because the woman who said a partridge in a pear tree never got her line right.
By the time we got down to a partridge in a pear tree.
Oh, that was so
By the
fun.
Way, did Lyric Opera of Chicago call you for an audition?
Yeah, I'm an understudy for Tosca.
Okay. I just kept having to go before you, and it was killing me.
Nessun Dorma. You were 5. Well, I had to. Well, you know, 5 golden rings is the key part of that song, though, Sam. So I wasn't trying to overshadow you, but that is the one part of the song that is like the chorus where the rest of the song goes in that same cadence, but then it goes 5 go. You know, so you have to punch that, man.
I was set up to fail.
I think you were. You know what? Talk to Dean.
I will.
Don't give me a hard time.
I'll call him right now.
He didn't give you the 5 golden rings. I'm sorry.
The right person got the right lines. You deserved it. You brought the house down.
It was fun. Well, I could tell, like I said, that song was kind of limping along. And it's like, if you listen back to the tape, I even said, boy, this sounded like a good idea on paper, didn't it? But, yeah, so we have to, you know, that's what you have to do when you're in the business of show. You've got to find a way to take it to another level. But Sam and Dave will be here bopping in throughout the show. My producer today is... And I love this. I don't know if her name is Lisa. What is your name?
Whatever you want it to be.
Well, no. What do you want it to be? Of course, it's going to be whatever I want it to be for the next 2.5 hours. But at least let me give you a chance to at least say what it is.
Lease.
L-I-S-E. Mm-hmm. Lease. I filled in a few weeks ago during the afternoon show, and Violetta was doing traffic. And so I initially, of course, called her Velveeta, and we had fun.
No, you didn't.
Oh, certainly. I couldn't say Violetta for 4 hours. So I just called her Velveeta, and she played along. So we had fun. So
don't call me lice, please.
No, I never even thought of lice.
Oh, man.
No, I never thought of that one. But you shouldn't have put it in my head.
Head lice?
Yeah, head lice. Oh, there you go. But I'm making jokes here. I don't even know it. So, yeah. So, Sam, since your name isn't always that easy to, that last name.
Sam is tough. Yes, I can see.
I'm going to have some butchering, some fun with that today, too.
Sure.
But anyway, I am very thankful for Dean for letting me fill in here. Always have fun working with his crew. And we've got, as I said, a fun show for you today. A lot of the usual and regulars here. Andy Mazur will be joining us right after this next break with sports. We'll have Mike Hammernick with the weather. Certainly be talking about some of the things going around in the city, especially yesterday. I hear there was some kind of a march. Did I miss that? We'll talk about that later in the show. This week it was announced that the Lucas Museum, that Star Wars museum that for 3 years was being threatened to be in Chicago, officially will now be in Los Angeles, where it always belonged, certainly in California. And so I'm going to talk with Jim McInerney, Jimmy Mack, as he is known, and also many people may or may not know that Jimmy is married to Wendy Snyder, WGN's very own Wendy Snyder. But Jimmy McInerney is a huge, huge Star Wars fan. In fact, he has a podcast called the Rebel Force Radio, and he's got a huge collection. He is the Star Wars guy, and so I'll be talking to him about the museum, if he feels a little sad that Chicago won't be ground zero for Star Wars, and also some other interesting Star Wars news that it seems to be always in the pop culture world now in the last couple of years. So he will be on. And later, we will talk to Dan Geyer of the Daily Herald. And this Tuesday will be the Academy Award nominations will be announced this Tuesday morning. So I thought we would have a nice little preview with a noted film critic in the area. And I know Dan for 30 years. In fact, I used to be a member of the Chicago Film Critics Association, which Dan is co-founder of. So Dan and I go way back. I haven't seen or spoken to him in many years, so I'm going to have a fun time talking movies with Dan Geyer, and then pretty soon the show will be over. So hopefully we'll be here, as I said, until about 11:45 before the Northwestern game. So stay tuned. I'm going to be here until 11:45. I hope you will too. I'm Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards. We will be back right after this to get this whole thing started. No switching. Those were numbers too big to ignore yesterday, not just here in Chicago, which based on, I would assume, Chicago estimates, there were 5 million people in Grant Park. That's what it looked like to me. Has to be. There had to be 5 million people. If there is any kind of gathering now in Chicago, in Grant Park, it is automatically 5 million people.
Five million people.
See that, Sam? You got your chance. You got your chance.
You walk right into that one.
But yeah, it's got to be. It looked like 5 million to me, right? It was very impressive, not only in Chicago, but all around the country, and even all around the world, in Paris and in London and other major European cities. Wow. So now I guess the key question will be, as Rick Pearson mentioned in his show just before this, was yesterday a message or a movement? And that will be the question. Will there be a harnessing of that power and of that passion and making it something more than just a day event? And we'll try to talk a little bit about that throughout the day or throughout the show here. But wow, you can't help but be impressed. And those who went, I know, said they were very inspired and very moved by the entire event. And sisters were doing it for themselves yesterday. No question about that. Before I get started here, I do have to spray my favorite scent of 2017, Glades Cashmere Woods. Glades Cashmere Woods is the best scent you can smell. In fact, yesterday I went to Target. I've been talking about this for about a month now when I filled in, especially over the Christmas holiday. I was on a few times, and I was talking about how I discovered Cashmere Woods, and now it is my scent in my house. Went to Target yesterday. I don't want to brag. Every Glade was filled except the Cashmere Woods. There was only 3 cans left. I can't believe it. I think I'm having an impact. On the phone here, we've got Andy Mazur talk about sports. How you doing, Andy?
I got to hit that. Hello, Jim. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm good. What's happening?
Well, what's happening with you? You got to be excited about today, huh? Some football?
Yeah, you know, sometimes they say that these games are better than the Super Bowl, that the conference championship games. And the first one should be a pretty good game with Green Bay taking on Atlanta. Green Bay sounds like they're going to have Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams available for them. Julio Jones looks like he's going to go for Atlanta. Matt Ryan's had himself a pretty decent bounce back year from a rough one last year. And this Falcons team shouldn't be taken very lightly. I know that Green Bay's got a little momentum going here, but this one should be a pretty decent game.
And that's the first game. The Atlanta-Green Bay game is the first game, right?
Yeah, that's the first one, the NFC Championship game. And it'll be followed up by the Patriots and the Steelers in New England. And, you know, again, I mean, it's hard, obviously, to bet against Tom Brady and the Patriots at home. But, you know, the Steelers have a chance. At least you think.
Did you see what happened, Andy, at the hotel, the Pittsburgh hotel? Some Patriots fan pulled the fire alarm at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I thought that only happened in college sports.
Yeah, no kidding.
But they evacuated the whole joint.
Well, you have to. What are you going to do?
I know. Well, I'm sure it was really warm outside, too, to you know, have everybody standing outside for a while, too.
So, Andy, did you pick, or even Sam, if you want to jump in, did any of you pick these 4 teams to be in at this point?
I didn't see the Falcons. I thought maybe, you know, Green Bay would get this far. I mean, I think everybody thinks the Patriots would have gotten this far.
Even without Brady for the first 4 games, though?
Yeah, because it's such a system thing out there. And they have so many weapons offensively that I think maybe I could stand. No, okay, maybe not.
Let's not get crazy. Well, like I said, you talking about to your point earlier about a lot of times these playoff games are better than the Super Bowl itself. My goodness, could you get a better football game than the Dallas Packers game last week? Oh my gosh!
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was just a well fought game, the tie, and then you know the play at the end once again, Aaron Rodgers coming through, and then you know that kick that won it. Started off a little to the left.
Yeah, it didn't look like it was going to go.
I know, because, you know, the coach sort of called a timeout just before, and the kicker did get the kick off, and it was good, but then it was a timeout. So he tried to ice him, and the kick that went through did start left.
Yes, it did. It didn't make it by much. Either.
I know. Could you have imagined? Oh, my gosh. So who are you picking today, and who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl?
I think the Falcons are going to take down the Packers.
Wow, today. You're going for the Falcons.
Yeah, I think the Falcons are going to do it.
Wow, good for you.
I might be the only one in America to think that way, but I'll think that way just because I like to think differently than everybody else.
And what about on the other side?
And the Patriots.
You're going Patriots, and then who would beat and who would win between the Patriots and the Falcons then if that were
and the Super Bowl? And it pains me to say, but the Patriots.
Okay, but okay, Sam is snoring. But here's my question, because sports guys all love to that to them, if you pick the favorites, they all snore, like Sam was doing. But my point is, do you want, if I, as an expert, I'm asking you for your expert opinion. I'm not asking you to make some outlandish prediction that most likely won't come true, but then if it does, you get to brag.
No, he's probably right. You're probably right, Andy. That's probably going to be the matchup. Yeah. I picked the Steelers from the jump, so I'm going to stick
with
that.
Oh, wow, you did.
I'm going to stick with that.
Stick with them.
I mean, why change an opinion? But he's right. It's probably going to be New England and Atlanta. I'm going Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and then I'll just stick with the Steelers to win it all. But you think New England, you think Tom Brady puts on that 5th ring, huh, Andy?
Wow.
Yeah, I think there's just too many things going against the Steelers at this point. Just the Patriots are just this. It stinks too. I mean, if you're an NFL fan and you can't stand the Patriots, it's really a bad time to be an NFL fan. You know, because.
They're always
so damn good, you know?
Yeah, they do seem like a very well-oiled machine, and they do every year, to be honest. I mean, like you said, it's mm-hmm. more of a system. But certainly when Tom Brady is in that system, the system works very well.
Yeah, it's a well-oiled machine at that point, yes.
And very quickly, we've got the Blackhawks tonight against the Canucks. And, Sam, we don't know yet who's going to be in goal?
We'll find out after the morning skate, about half an hour from now.
Well, Scott Darling certainly coming off of an impressive shutout the other night against the Bruins, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying there's a goalie controversy or anything like that, but, you know, there are certain times where a goalie goes through a little slump, and, you know, Crawford has been a little off lately, and Darling has been a good guy to have on the bench, and a guy that comes in that has only given up one goal in the last 70 shots he's faced, so... I like what Scott Darling said after the game the other day. He says, "Hey, listen, do you know my goalie partner? He's one of the best goalies in the world. I'll just go in when they call me. There's no real controversy there. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Darling goes back to back. It wouldn't be a big shock."
Well, it's no doubt that Joel Quenneville likes Darling quite a bit. So I think that the chances are he certainly earned it. So we'll see what happens. Andy Mazur, thank you so much. We're going to hold you to your predictions because you're going with Atlanta. Wow.
Going with Atlanta.
Okay,
going
we'll hold Atlanta. You to that. We'll
All
see.
Right, sounds good.
People in Green Bay aren't too happy with you right now.
Well, that's okay.
Andy Mazur giving us a little sports update here. Thanks a lot, Andy. We'll talk to you soon. And I'm going to take a quick break. Be right back after this. No switching.
Elton, Jim, and Sam, our far-flung forecast takes us out east to Medford, Massachusetts.
Medford, Massachusetts. Why? Medford? Oh, why? Oh, why, Dave?
Why? I'll tell you why here, Uncle Elton. We met.
All right, snot nose Davey.
Just to give you an idea as to where Medford is, it is 3.2 miles, to be exact, northwest of Boston.
I didn't know that.
Well, we bring up Medford in a roundabout way today, but for in the end, really for a Chicago reason.
Oh, because at the end of the day, I mean, let's face it, everything does revolve around Chicago, right? But
as Mayor Rahm Emanuel says, it's the center of the universe.
Yeah.
So Medford,
he needs
however,
a compass.
Medford is the birthplace of a legendary broadcaster in Chicago who was a very, very busy man this Thursday 50 years ago.
All right, so let's see the way you're spinning this one now.
The great Harry Volkman.
So wow, did you come
Medford,
full circle?
Massachusetts.
So we pick Medford today because of weather, and because of weather, we've got Harry Volkman, who was born in Medford, Massachusetts.
Born in Medford, Massachusetts, and he was a very busy person 50 years ago this coming Thursday because that marks the 50th anniversary of Chicago's big snow.
Ah, yes, that was
23 inches.
Yes, that one is one that still, for people that were around and were living through it, that one still remains the big one.
That's
even though
the big one.
There have been others.
Oh, yes.
Certainly. There was one in particular helped get a new mayor elected, if you remember that one.
That was
one.
A blizzard of 79.
Right, yeah, but yeah. But 67 still is one that goes down in people's memories. Were you around, I assume,
that
right?
I was in sixth grade, yeah.
Sixth grade. So were you in school? Was that I was only 3 years old, so
yeah. No,
I don't remember.
It was a Friday, and yes, we were in school. And one of the reasons that people remember this is because it caught people by surprise. The forecast was just for cloudy skies, maybe some flurries, no big deal. And then...
Well, there was no Tom Skilling back in 1967.
And there was no Doppler radar and that sort of thing.
I mean, we didn't have that. Yeah.
Did not have it. And as I told some people here earlier this morning, went to school, normal day, looking forward to the weekend. It started snowing around 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and it just got more and more intense. So around 1 o'clock, right after lunch, the announcement was made, go home, school is closed. And I'll bet you there was a foot of snow on the ground already.
Oh, so they let you home early.
They let us go home early. And later in the day, Dad barely made it home from work. We had dinner, and then Dad and I got out and tried to shovel And we gave up. Yeah. We just couldn't do it.
Well, I'll tell you, like I said, I was only 3 years old. Thankfully, my mom did take some pictures of me. I do have them. In fact, now, what was the date? January what?
January 26th, 1967.
Okay. I will dig those pictures out and put that on my Facebook page this week because I was three, and I do have pictures of me in the yard looking dwarfed by the snow drifts and the shoveled snow in the backyard. I was dressed up in a very similar outfit like Randy from A Christmas Story. Randy was his brother. Okay. Was his younger brother, Randy.
The great big snowsuit.
That you can't move your arms in.
Right.
I do have one of those on, and so I'll have to find that. But like I said, I have no memory of it, but thankfully I do have some pictures. Now, the funny thing is if you go back, and now especially thanks to the internet, you can Google this, when you look, it wasn't just that, 23, 24 inches of snow
23
fell,
inches, yeah.
But unbelievably, I mean, there was really no... It seemed to be no plan of how to remove snow back then, because the pictures that I've seen of the city, it looks like a frozen tundra. There are just cars that are abandoned, sideways, buses. It looks like the city completely shut down.
And it did. And it did. The other thing I remember from this is that some people had snow blowers, but they weren't quite the norm that they are,
not almost 50 years ago.
Driveways out. So everybody was digging out with shovels. And I remember people congregating in the street in our neighborhood when we finally made it out of the driveway going, oh, you made it. Hey, good morning.
Hey, you're still alive.
And again, as I say, that was a Friday. I don't think we had school the following Monday because it was still rough going.
Yeah, go online and just hit Chicago snowstorm 1967.
Yeah,
and you will see these pictures of either both neighborhoods in Chicago, as well as the downtown area, and it just looks as if, to your point, that not only did this catch the city by surprise, but they certainly. We're not prepared, I probably even not with any kind of force of, tow trucks that we do now. Because ever since, as we talked about before, ever since 1979, that blizzard in January, which basically toppled Michael Blandick's mayoral administration and made way for Jane Byrne.
Correct.
Every mayor in Chicago since 1979 overcompensates for snow removal to make sure that they keep their job.
This is why we have briefings from the Office of Emergency Management.
And that's why we have these streets being salted sometimes when it's raining in February, just in case. Now, we are going to talk to Mike Hammernick after 10 o'clock, and we will talk about the amazing weather that we had yesterday and continue to have this mild January. My birthday was a few weeks ago, so I'm always used to having snow and dreary kind of birthday, and for the whole month of January. And my gosh, yesterday we were out driving around, and if you didn't know what month it was and just looked outside the window at both the amazingly blue sky with a few little puffy white clouds here and there, no snow on the ground, And you could have your window open in the car.
Which I did.
Yeah, you'd either think it was March and April or September or October.
Yep. By the way, one more thing real quick, Elton, Jim. The forecast for Medford today, Medford, Massachusetts, cloudy in 44. There
I missed them because there's 10 Medfords and like 20 Milfords.
Medford.
Missed the state.
Medford, Massachusetts.
So it's Medford.
Era Medford.
Medford.
Era Medford.
Medford, Massachusetts.
Go park your car over at Harvard Square.
Medford.
One time, the first time I ever went to Boston, I went to Fenway Park. So I got lost.
Fenway Park.
So I got lost, and I'm in a car, and I see a convenience store. So I pull
driving in Boston.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. Well, that's my point. So so I get lost, and I pull into this convenience store. And there's this guy in a truck, like not a 15 or 18 wheeler, just a regular kind of Jeep truck. And he gets out. And so I figure, this guy will know. So I said, excuse me, do you know where Fenway Park is? And he goes, yeah. And he just keeps walking. Yeah, I know where it is. I ain't going to tell you where it is. I'm like, yeah. What the heck was that?
It's on Yawkey Way.
Yeah, it's over on Yawkey Way. But we want to talk about after that. We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking about Medford, Massachusetts, not only because of the interesting weather we've had so far, but a tie-in that Dave made was, once again, a Chicago original. Harry Volkman was one of the, if not the most popular and well-known weather forecasters in Chicago for many years. And, of course, if the last name sounds familiar, he is the father of Eddie Volkman, radio personality. But so I will we'll talk a little about Harry Volkman because this is so 50 years ago was the I mean, you know, your head, you baffled me with. So we got Harry Volkman born in Massachusetts, but 50 years for the snowstorm.
And his first job in weather reporting was in Oklahoma.
Oh, now you're
he
really
made the rounds.
Okay, now my head's going to explode here, Dave. Jeez. But I do want to talk about Harry Volkman because he was very popular, and one of his little shticks was going to schools to speak. And lo and behold, he did go to my grammar school, good old St. Bartholomew's on the Northwest Side, back in the late 70s. And so I've got my own little Harry Volkman story. So we're going to take a quick break here. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We'll be here till about 11:45, and then Northwestern will be taken to the airwaves. But stay tuned. We got lots more to talk about here at WGN, and we'll be back soon. No switching. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Happy Sunday. It's about 9:52. We'll be here until about 11:45. Then we go to Northwestern basketball. Dave Schwann, are you there, sir?
I'm here.
We were talking before the break about Harry Volkman, who is from, and I got a lot of text to Sam's point. It's, I guess, you say Medford, Medfa.
Medfa?
Medfa.
Medfa.
Medfa. Don't even say the D.
Not even the D.
Not even the D. It's Medfa.
Medfa.
Medfa. Era. Medfa.
But us Midwesterners, we're going to say Medford.
You got to love the Boston accent. It's just, it's New York on steroids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, New York has that little twang to it. And a lot of times they will put R's, like, you know, Cincinnati, you know, I mean, they'll put R's at the end of their, especially words that end with A
right,
or something.
Right, right.
But Boston, oh, you got to love the Boston accent. I have a friend whose wife was from Maine, but she's from the East Coast. And she speaks very clear, you know, almost a Midwestern accent because she lived in Cincinnati for a good period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she moved back east. They moved back east. And one day we were over by their house and her parents came to visit. And her parents had a very thick Eastern Maine accent.
Sure.
And it was amazing. Within
Did
two,
she fall right back into
within
it?
2 seconds, she starts going, hey, pa, hey, dad, hey, father. You know, I mean,
father,
it was like
how
she
I
just
did.
Fell right back in. And, you know, and I had never known her to have that accent because I knew her from her Cincinnati accent.
Yeah.
And I went, whoa, what the heck happened here? And it was, I mean, as soon as she said hello to her mother and father, boom. She went right back into
right
that
back
Eastern
into
accent.
It.
Sure. Yeah, it's very funny. But now, what's interesting, to your point, Harry Volkman is from Medfa, Massachusetts, but he certainly did not sound.
No, not at all.
So he obviously must have either worked on his accent or maybe he didn't have a thick accent to begin with.
Yeah, and there are some people in the Boston area that I, you know, that didn't necessarily acquire that in the first place. I've talked with someone who I met through some California friends, actually. And as we were talking, I said to her, you know, you don't sound like you're from Boston. And she said, well, you know, that sometimes happens. You know, that some people sound more or less like they're from this part of the country. But then there are others who that sound like they're from definitely from Boston. But you mentioned, again, Harry Volkman got his start in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in January 1950, and then eventually came here to Chicago. And all through the 1960s was the weather president.
Oh, and through
Chicago.
The 70s as well. Yeah. And, in fact, as I said, I got a little quick story about him, but we've also got someone here on the line. Gary has a Harry Volkman story. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Good morning, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, no problem.
I'm 56 years old. I was in seventh grade.
Sorry to hear that.
And I was absent from school. And Harry made a trip out to Lake Zurich. And he was kind enough to get a list of the students that were absent.
Oh, really?
And he called me at 9 o'clock at night.
Are you serious?
That's what a gentleman.
Wow.
He was indeed a gentleman.
Well, yeah, here's like a
gentleman's gentleman.
As I said earlier, to play onto Gary's story here. So what Harry Volkman did, which was very smart, Harry Volkman really was, we were very lucky in the 60s and 70s. We had some really popular and fun weathermen. We had Harry Volkman, we had John Coughlin at Channel 2.
John Coughlin at Channel 2 and John Coleman at Channel 7.
You're right. And John Coleman was pretty much off the wall. He was almost like a carnival barker. He was really kind of just crazy. John Coughlin was very straightforward, had very nice, easygoing, almost Marcus Welby, Robert Young kind of manner to him.
But he had a very conversational delivery.
Yes, he was very good. And then there was Harry Volkman. And Harry Volkman made his mark. He used to always wear, every newscast, he would wear a boutonniere, a big carnation or a big flower on his lapel. And then he would visit schools to tell schools about weather. And to Gary's point, so what school did you go to, Gary?
I was in St. Francis de Sales in Lake Zurich.
Okay.
And it was just a shock when the phone rang at 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, how? Yeah. Did he say, hello, this is Harry Volkman?
Yes, he did. He said, Gary, this is Harry Volkman from WGN.
Oh.
And I was astounded. He said, I was out to your school today. He said, and I understand that you were home ill. He said, and I wanted to call you and wish you well and say hello.
Wow, but, that's really
Harry,
cool.
A couple of years ago here, Bob Surratt interviewed Harry before he passed. And Harry Volkman credited a lot of his career to Jack Taylor, the former anchor from WGN News. And Harry Volkman said in the interview, he said when he changed, I don't know if it was from 2 or 7, he went over.
Yeah, he went from 7 to Channel 9, yeah.
Actually, he was on Channel 5 with Floyd Calvert.
Right, and then he went to Channel 9, yeah.
He said, who would not want to go to WGN? He said, when Jack Taylor was there, he said, and those are the coattails you could grasp onto because he was a leading man in Chicago. Back
yeah. Well, thanks for that story, Gary. I've got one, too. He came to my school. My grammar school, probably in 1977 or 76, something like that. St. Bartholomew, which is a Catholic grammar school on the northwest side near it's on Addison near Cicero. And that's where I went to grammar school. And he came to our school. We had a big assembly in the gym. And I remember two of the girls in our class. I don't know how they got chosen, but it was a big deal. These two girls were chosen, and they presented Harry Volkman with a boutonniere, which I believe was red and white because that was our school colors. We were the St. Bart's Crusaders, and our colors were red and white. And that night on the Channel 9 News, Harry Volkman wore our St. Bartholomew boutonniere. And my gosh, were we proud. So Harry Volkman, born in Medfast, Massachusetts. Thank you for that far flunger there, Mr. Schwani.
Absolutely.
All right. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Dane Richards this morning. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. No switching.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine. Blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Jim Toronto filling in for Dane Richards this morning. We'll be here till 11:45, and then Northwestern will battle Ohio State in college basketball. Right now on the phone, we're talking about a summer breeze. Yesterday definitely was a summer breeze. We have Mike Hammernick on the line to talk a little weather. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Jim. Good morning. How you doing?
Very good. I'll tell you, as I said earlier, my birthday was on January 8th, and usually in my lifetime, Januaries have always been very cold and very dreary and very miserable. But my goodness, what happened? What was yesterday?
Yeah, that was really an anomaly. And what makes it really strange...
Did we break a record at all?
We did at Midway. Yeah, hit 60 at Midway, 61 at a couple downtown locations, 59 officially at O'Hare. What goes in the books is the warmest January 21st officially in over 100 years.
100 years?
Yeah.
We're number one.
1906.
We're number one.
1906.
Very
cool.
The
only warmer official day here.
That was almost the last time the Cubs won a World Series before this year.
By those years, the big earthquake in San Francisco. So,
oh, wow.
Shows you how far
Holy
removed
smokes.
We were from that record.
So what's going on? Are we getting this? I've been reading about it. So we're getting Gulf air or the Canadian air isn't hitting? What is happening and what's not happening?
It's all the storms are hitting the Pacific Coast. You know how much rain they've gotten lately, and Southern California is getting in on the action now. They've missed out on a lot of the heavier rains, but they're getting pounded this morning and overnight with heavy rains. It's all that Pacific air that moves across the country. It's modified. There's no Arctic air around, and it warms up occasionally. You know what was really rare about yesterday's warm-up? Usually it takes a big storm and strong southerly winds to get that type of warm air this far north at this time of the year, but that wasn't the case yesterday. That's something I've never really seen before. If you get near 60 at this time of the year, it's almost always associated with a big storm, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I mean, and this has just been so... I mean, when was the last time we had measurable snow? Was it December, right?
December 17th, yeah.
Wow.
And a neat stat, too, is, you know, what broke down January, usually we get 60% snow and 40% rain here in Chicago. We're pretty close to that. And so far this January, 99.9% rain and 0.1% snow.
I mean, is it possible? So, I mean, we've got another week to go.
Yeah.
Are we going to get out of the month completely snow-free, or are there going to be some dustings, or what's going to go on?
Some dustings, yeah. Changes around the way. We're seeing a big pattern shift. We're going to say goodbye to this mild weather pattern and back to a more winter-like pattern. Now, we don't see anything brutally cold like we had for a couple stretches earlier this year, but a much more typical winter-like pattern late this week and into the first week, maybe the first 2 weeks of February. So winter's back. And
right, but you're seeing cold, but not necessarily snow, right?
Nothing big. No big storms. There's going to be a little system passing to our north on Tuesday night and Wednesday, and that could produce a dusting around here, maybe an inch in the northern suburbs. And there'll be some flakes flying on Thursday and Friday, flurries mostly. But that's about it. So we will see some flakes fly, but it's not going to add up to much here in Chicago.
So if we make it out of... say February with very little snow.
Right.
By March, is the ground warming up that if it snows, the chances of a big snow and hanging around are less because the ground is warmer, or is it still kind of cold?
It doesn't reduce our chance for a big snow, but it definitely doesn't stick around as long. Two factors, the ground is warmer, and number two, the sun angle is a lot higher. So even you might be 25 degrees, it might even be a cloudy day, there's so much radiation still coming through the clouds that, you know, you start melting the snow because the sun angle is so high. So it definitely doesn't stick around as long because of the sun angle, because the ground is...
I hate shoveling snow, and this is the greatest winter we've had in a while. And I'm enjoying this. I know if you're a snow plower or if you own any kind of winter-related sports business or things, I'm sure this has got to be a killer of a winter. But if you're just a regular person that just likes to live life and go outside and not be frozen or not having to shovel for an hour and a half or not have your car slip and slide, you almost get... I'm lulled into a thing. I'm forgetting about the weather when I go out. You know, usually at this time of the year, we always have to worry about the weather. What kind of coat do I wear? Do I have gloves? Do I have a scarf? Right. Blah, blah, blah. You know, do I have to leave early because of the... And it's almost like you live in California. You just sort of walk outside.
Yeah, it's been typical, like, Seattle weather for us.
Yeah.
This last month with the fog and the clouds.
Yeah.
And the occasional rain. You know, another stat that is probably going to blow you away because it blew me away. You know, snowfall-wise for the year so far, we're still above normal.
Really?
Despite the fact we haven't had any since the 17th. We had so much, it was so out of whack early in December.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're still like 2 inches above normal for this date in the season.
Huh.
And we typically, for the rest of the season, we still get about 20 inches of snow, so we're definitely not out of the woods.
Well, I remember a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, we had that big snow, and it was like February 1st or
Groundhog
February 2nd.
Storm, yeah.
Yeah, so that we certainly are not out of the woods, but we certainly can see the end of the tunnel, I think, a little closer than we could have before.
Yeah,
and the sun is shining at the end of that tunnel.
Yeah, and it's longer in the afternoon, too. We've gained 35 minutes now of afternoon. We haven't seen it much lately.
Right.
But, the days are definitely getting longer. We've gained 35 minutes of daylight. Sunset's almost 5 o'clock now, so we're trending in the right direction.
Real quick forecast, because I've got to take a break here, Mike.
Yeah, we're looking at cloudy skies, some mist and drizzle this afternoon. Could see a peak. If you get really lucky, you might see a peak or two of sun. We've seen that in some of the northern suburbs, but more clouds than sun definitely today. 44 down to 35 for a low tonight, with clouds and fog, and cloudy tomorrow again, high of 43, and then some rain late Tuesday and changing over to snow Wednesday, but again, nothing big as far as accumulation is concerned.
Very good. Mike Hammernick at the WGN Weather. What is it? Weather Central? Weather Control? What do you have there?
Weather Center, yeah.
Weather Center. Yeah. Thank you. Always fun to talk to you.
Jim. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Mike Hammernick. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. Take a quick break, and we're going to talk to one of the organizers of yesterday's Women's March right here in Illinois. So stay tuned. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. It was almost incredible not to notice the amazing turnout for the Women's March here in the Chicago area in downtown in Grant Park. And I've got Ann Schollhammer, who was one of the organizers for the Women's March here in Chicago. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So, were you as shocked as everyone else at the turnout?
You know, there was a moment where we were shocked, but then it quickly was like, well, of course they came, you know?
If they build it, if you build it, they will come.
Exactly.
Well, so here's the thing. Everybody, especially if you watch it on TV as I did throughout the day, and you just watch this thing unfold, and it became a very organic kind of rally, as it just seemed to keep growing as the day went on.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because it really reflected how it started from the very beginning. It was organic. It was people that didn't know each other. It was people on Facebook. And, you know, and it's just continued to evolve organically, but so powerfully.
Well, that's the word that I've been hearing from a lot of people who attended. They've been talking about how inspirational it was, how moving it was, how empowering it was. And so I guess now, as an organizer of this event, I'm sure you are going to be faced with this question if you haven't already begun to think about it. Certainly, I'm hearing it now being spoken about in news quarters. So now how do we go from this being either a singular day message or the first day of a new movement?
It's absolutely the first day of a new movement. And that's been our kind of tagline all along, is you have to get active, whether it's running for office or making your voice heard about, you know, Supreme Court nominations, getting involved in local things. But even bigger than that, it's really about taking these groups that came out, because yesterday we had the privileged and we had the marginalized in one space. And they're not always treated the same way in society. And we have the ability to take all these groups that do great work, like Black Lives Matter, you know, Planned Parenthood, SEIU, and put them under one umbrella to work together. So it's really twofold. It's one, we need to create, you know, something that really brings organizations together, but people have to go get active.
Well, that's the thing. And I as I watched this yesterday, I couldn't help but think in kind of a bittersweet way that if Hillary Clinton was watching that, certainly as a woman, I'm sure she was very proud, but another side of her had to have been wondering both out loud and internally, where were all these people and where was this passion and where were these this participation in November? Because while Hillary Clinton won the woman's vote and won the youth vote, she did not win as big as she had expected. And she certainly didn't reach Obama-like levels. And the irony is that most of those issues that were being talked about yesterday, whether it was pro-choice or the glass ceiling, you know, women's rights, women's, you know, workplace kind of issues, family leave, all those issues were on the table during the election. And so What do you think happened? Why did we see such an outpouring yesterday, and yet on November 8th, there would have been no need for yesterday if Hillary Clinton had been elected president?
Well, you know, that gets into some political things that I'm just not really as up to date on or as knowledgeable about. But in general, I feel like the election and the rhetoric of the election just turned so many people angry. And, you know, I think a lot of us felt like it's okay. We're going to get past this. You know, after the election is over, we're going to clean this up and make this better. And unfortunately, we have to clean up in a different way, and we just have to work harder.
So because yesterday was obviously a show of solidarity mm-hmm. in many ways, but the heart of any protest that ultimately will bring change, which is your goal, mm-hmm. You do need either a set of messages or a very clearly defined set of goals. And yesterday there were a lot of issues. I saw a lot of different signs with a lot of different issues. So to your point mm-hmm. about moving forward now and making this a movement, mm-hmm. what would you consider the key kind of demands or asks or messages that a next step now from yesterday will take?
You know, I think if you look at the list of speakers and the messages and the issues that we had, it was so broad, and we were so concerned about having this huge long event with all these speakers that we felt like we didn't even hit all the issues that we wanted to. There are so many. We can't take any group that's being marginalized and say you're not one of the key issues, because it is. So it's got to be something bigger than that. It's got to be really around, you know, marginalization of a group for a reason that you just don't agree with them and you think they deserve less than you. And so there are groups in Chicago that were involved in this and putting this together from the very beginning, like Rainbow Push and SEIU and a number of other organizations and leaders. And, you know, we had to start thinking. We've already started to say, okay, we need to get together. We need to figure out how we make this bigger.
Yeah, because the goal definitely has to be now, and I'm speaking with Ann Schollhammer, who is one of the organizers for the Women's March. The goal now is how do you harness that power and that enthusiasm to make a difference moving forward?
You know, I would say 90% of the people that were out there yesterday had never participated in the march. We had women who've been marching since the 50s, but there were a lot of men and women and children that have never been part of march, and they felt something that they've never felt before. So whatever it takes, you know, I'm in. I'm not going to speak for my co-chairs because they're both really tired too. But, you know, if you told me that to make change, we had to do this every year, you know, I'd make it happen.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it might need to be done every 2 months or every month. Yeah. I mean, to really affect the change, because ultimately the next time there could be a change would be in the midterm election. So would be a goal that you need to look mm-hmm. for. Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with your organization or any kind of organization that would be involved in something like this, where would they go? Is there any kind of thing set up yet?
Well, you can go to our website, which is, you know, basically any iteration of Women's March on Chicago, womensmarchchicago.com.org. We've got them all because nobody can get that right exactly. so we have a website there. I would tell people to check back. We probably need to switch over. And, you know, these are all volunteers. This is like every one of us has a day job or doing something else full time. So be patient with us while we get things moved over to a new platform so that we can stay in touch with people. So,
well, thank you for taking time out on your Sunday. I'm sure you do want to get a few winks in. I'm sure it was quite a long and exhilarating day, and I'm sure it took a lot out of you. So take a nap and get regenerized, and we'll see what happens next. Ann Schollhammer, of one of the organizers for the Women's March yesterday. Thanks for taking some time out.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Great. Take no care. Problem. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. And I could have played the official John Williams version of Star Wars, but I thought I would play the Mako 1970s big hit. I thought maybe my guest would appreciate that one. You probably heard the official Star Wars theme enough.
The
Jimmy McInerney
version of that thing went on for like 15 minutes.
Oh, I know.
You remember that?
Believe me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a disco era.
It was, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we have Jimmy McInerney here in the studio. Welcome.
Oh, thanks, Jim. It's so good to be here.
And you are the host of Rebel Force Radio.
Yes, where people know me more commonly
as
Jimmy Mac.
Jimmy Mac.
Or where they know me more commonly here at WGN Radio
as
Mr. Snyder.
Mr. Snyder. If you didn't know, Jimmy McInerney, Jimmy Mac, is the husband of Wendy Snyder.
The lovely and talented.
And I was looking on your website. I had no idea that your son was quite the musician.
Yes, he played last night in downtown LaGrange.
Nice.
It was a really great show. He played 3 hours. And
Is he, Bruce Springsteen?
He threw it all in. he's as hardworking as
go.
Bruce Springsteen, I'll
there
tell you that. And so he's 17 years old. He goes to LaGrange Township High School.
Nice.
And he's really following his passion, and he's jumping on the train for a musical career. He's actually working very hard, and we're really proud of him.
Well, I wanted to have Jimmy Mac on because I saw in the paper this week that, or last week it was, that officially the Lucas Museum that was going to be down at the lakefront here in Chicago by George Lucas and have a lot of Star Wars, obviously memorabilia, as well as other things like Norman Rockwell paintings. It was really, I think it was supposed to be called, what, the Narrative Museum?
The Lucas Museum of Narrative Art.
Right. And so about 3 years ago, he wanted to have it in San Francisco in an area right off the bay. And he's from the San Francisco area, right?
Yeah, he's from the Bay Area.
Yeah, right. And so that's where he wanted in his hometown. And obviously in California, which is the home of movie making. And there was a lot, there was, you know, some resistance to it. He wanted it in an area that, what was the area? The Presidio is kind of like a national park, right?
Right, and it's governed by the Presidio Trust. And the Presidio Trust started to make Lucas jump through a lot of hoops to attempt to get clearance to build the museum there at a spot that is, I believe it's an abandoned sporting goods store.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's a real eyesore. And Lucas was proposing to build something rather, it was rather traditional looking.
Oh, initially?
Yeah, initially it was...
Didn't have that kind of space age look that they had in Chicago as well as the now.
Not at all.
Yeah.
No. And I think that turned people off in San Francisco. So they held a competition and they opened it up to the public to see who could put together the biggest and greatest proposal to get this land in the Presidio.
Uh-huh.
And Lucas, of course, was among this group, you know, lobbying to get the museum built there. And at the end of all of this, whoop-de-doo, the Presidio Trust said, well, we're not doing anything with the land now.
Now, first of all, as I said, Jimmy Mac is definitely earned his stripes as a Star Wars fan, because today, especially, he walks into the studio and he's got an Industrial Light and Magic T-shirt on, which is the George Lucas company that was founded to make all the different special effects, not only for Star Wars movies, but almost every movie that you see.
Yes, and I bought the shirt in the employee store.
There you go.
ILM.
Okay, so your cred is there.
I host Rebel Force Radio, so by doing so, it has opened a lot of doors.
So here's the thing. So then it gets kicked out of California, and suddenly, about 3 years ago, for whatever odd reason, Chicago is floated as a possible new home for this Lucas Museum. And it wasn't completely surprising if you started to peel some of the layers of the onion away, because George Lucas's wife is Melody Hobson, who is a Chicagoan, very well connected, and a friend of Rahm. And so it wasn't surprising that maybe she went to her hometown friend and mayor and said, hey, you know, George's museum got kicked out of California, so let's do it here. Mm-hmm. And a part of me, and this is where I want to get your take on, a part of me, the uncynical part says maybe it was just some hometown pride on Melody Hobson's viewpoint to say, let's see if we can do it here in Chicago, even though you know, George Lucas is not from Chicago. He lives here, obviously, to some extent, because his wife is from here. Mm-hmm. But Chicago is not the home of filmmaking. It was an odd choice. Mm-hmm. The cynical side of me says George Lucas still wanted it in either San Francisco or somewhere in California and said, hey, the best way to negotiate with California is to bring in another major player to show some interest. And then maybe that will get California or San Francisco or L.A. or somebody out there off their butts and get it back there. So I find it interesting that 3 years later, after several lawsuits, after fighting with Friends of the Park on the lakefront and him demanding here in Chicago that it be at a lakefront location, mm-hmm. that officially a couple of weeks ago it was announced it's going to be in Los Angeles and it's not going to be by water.
It's not, no.
So my question is, do you think that I'm just some scary conspiracy theorist, or I feel that Chicago was kind of used as a negotiating tool? And I hope that isn't the case, because people like you, Star Wars fans, you have to be disappointed that it's not going to be in Chicago.
I was
right?
greatly disappointed, yeah.
Yeah. So now, when you were following this, I mean, how exciting was this for you, the prospect? Because it sounded like, yes, there's a lot of mumbo-jumbo going on, but it's going to get done.
Yeah, it seemed like a tremendous cultural, educational, and economic opportunity.
Now, would you have moved from wherever you live to move right across the street from it?
No, I would not, but I have relatively easy access thanks to the Stevenson.
So as a fan of Star Wars, I mean, when you heard the news, what were you thinking? Like, oh, my gosh.
When the museum was coming here?
Yeah.
It was a shock. It was a surprise. But I had known that George Lucas had been spending a lot of time here in the city of Chicago. He had married Melody Hobson here. They had a big reception at Hyde Park, which was... it was just tremendously huge.
Which also plays into my conspiracy theory, because they were given special permission to have their wedding in a spot where most people can't.
Yeah.
So my idea of Melody Hobson and Rom having a little relationship, you know, favorite relationship, isn't completely crazy.
Mm-hmm. And that's fair. I mean, why wouldn't they?
No. But I just think it's surprising that now, as I said, 3 years later, all these lawsuits, it was a very controversial spot that they chose.
Yes.
It wasn't very attractive. It was kind of the parking lot of Soldier Field, right?
It still is.
Yeah, and it still will be.
Yes, it will be.
So I just, you know, once again, maybe it's a conspiracy theorist in me, but I look at this and I say, you know, and one thing, now you tell me, do you think that George Lucas was an enthusiastic proponent for Chicago?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I didn't hear him. I didn't, you know, to me, all George Lucas had to do was hold one press conference downtown somewhere or in that spot and say, Chicago, you are my adopted home. I live here now with my wife, and I can't wait to bring my museum to Chicago. And if that would have happened, I think all this other legal mumbo jumbo stuff would have gotten cleared away. But I never really felt like George Lucas was all in.
Well,
for
know,
Chicago.
He is a reserved and private guy. Always has been. Never someone to seek out the spotlight. And he didn't necessarily have that sort of press conference in San Francisco or LA. So it just, he has been consistent in that regard. I wish there was a better marketing push to raise awareness as to what the museum was all about. A lot of people labeled it a vanity project.
Right.
A lot of people called it a, quote, Star Wars museum.
Which it was not supposed to. It was going to be some Star Wars in there, but not completely. Yeah.
Well, of course, but the amount of artwork and film history that the man has collected over the years fills warehouses and should be shown to the public.
Right.
And he's footing the bill for it. After selling off Lucasfilm and removing himself from filming,
his museum got kicked out of California, so let's do it here. Mm-hmm. And a part of me, and this is what I want to get your take on, a part of me, the uncynical part says maybe it was just some hometown pride, mm-hmm. on Melody Hobson's viewpoint, to say, let's see if we can do it here in Chicago, even though you know, George Lucas is not from Chicago. He lives here, obviously, to some extent, because his wife is from here. Mm-hmm. But Chicago is not the home of filmmaking. It was an odd choice. Mm-hmm. The cynical side of me says George Lucas still wanted it in either San Francisco or somewhere in California and said, hey, the best way to negotiate with California is to bring in another major player to show some interest. And then maybe that will get California or San Francisco or L.A. or somebody out there off their butts and get it back there. So I find it interesting that 3 years later, after several lawsuits, after fighting with Friends of the Park on the lakefront and him demanding here in Chicago that it be at a lakefront location, mm-hmm. that officially a couple of weeks ago it was announced it's going to be in Los Angeles and it's not going to be by water.
It's not, no.
So my question is, do you think that I'm just some scary conspiracy theorist, or I feel that Chicago was kind of used as a negotiating tool? And I hope that isn't the case, because people like you, Star Wars fans, you have to be disappointed that it's not going to be in Chicago.
I was
right?
greatly disappointed, yeah.
Yeah. So now, when you were following this, I mean, how exciting was this for you, the prospect? Because it sounded like, yes, there's a lot of mumbo-jumbo going on, but it's going to get done.
Yeah, it seemed like a tremendous cultural, educational, and economic opportunity.
Now, would you have moved from wherever you live to move right across the street from it?
No, I would not, but I have relatively easy access thanks to the Stevenson.
So as a fan of Star Wars, when you heard the news, what were you thinking? Like, oh, my gosh.
When the museum was coming here?
Yeah.
It was a shock. It was a surprise. But I had known that George Lucas had been spending a lot of time here in the city of Chicago. He had married Melody Hobson here. They had a big reception at Hyde Park, which was... it was just tremendously huge.
Which also plays into my conspiracy theory, because they were given special permission to have their wedding in a spot where most people can't.
Yeah.
So my idea of Melody Hobson and Rom having a little relationship, you know, favorite relationship, isn't completely crazy.
Mm-hmm. And that's fair. I mean, why wouldn't they?
No. But I just think it's surprising that now, as I said, 3 years later, all these lawsuits, it was a very controversial spot that they chose.
Yes.
It wasn't very attractive. It was kind of the parking lot of Soldier Field, right?
It still is.
Yeah, and it still will be.
Yes, it will be.
So I just, you know, once again, maybe it's a conspiracy theorist in me, but I look at this and I say, you know, and one thing, now you tell me, do you think that George Lucas was an enthusiastic proponent for Chicago?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I didn't hear him. I didn't, you know, to me, all George Lucas had to do was hold one press conference downtown somewhere or in that spot and say, Chicago, you are my adopted home. I live here now with my wife, and I can't wait to bring my museum to Chicago. And if that would have happened, I think all this other legal mumbo jumbo stuff would have gotten cleared away. But I never really felt like George Lucas was all in.
Well,
for,
know,
Chicago.
He is a reserved and private guy. Always has been. Never someone to seek out the spotlight. And he didn't necessarily have that sort of press conference in San Francisco or L.A. So it just, he has been consistent in that regard. I wish there was a better marketing push to raise awareness as to what the museum was all about. A lot of people labeled it a vanity project.
Right.
A lot of people called it a, quote, Star Wars museum.
Which it was not supposed to. It was going to be some Star Wars in there, but not completely. Yeah.
Well, of course, but the amount of artwork and film history that the man has collected over the years fills warehouses and should be shown to the public.
Right.
And he's footing the bill for it. After selling off Lucasfilm and removing himself from filmmaking and Star Wars, essentially retiring, what does a guy want to do?
And plus, he got $4 billion in his bank account from that, from selling Star Wars.
And half of which went to charity.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money, my friend. But what does a guy want to do when he retires? He wants to hang out in his man cave.
Right.
And George's man cave.
That would have been the ultimate. That's the ultimate man cave.
Is going to be the museum. And it's going to be great. I look forward to visiting it in L.A. I just want to see it built.
Yeah.
At this point.
Well, like I said, I think I look at this and I just, as I said, the cynical side of me says, you know, I just hope that there were pure motivations on this. But I the way it ended up, it is in California. Now, to your point, it wasn't in San Francisco. It's in L.A., so that wasn't the exact spot that he wanted.
Which is interesting because George Lucas has always worked independently of the Hollywood system. He moved his base of operations back up to the Bay Area from L.A. Very early in his career, footed the bill for all of his films. Those Star Wars films are the world's biggest independent film ever made. And so it's ironic that he spent his whole career avoiding Hollywood, but yet here he is going to have his man cave built in L.A. Now, but on the other side of the coin, it's right next to USC in a museum campus.
Right.
And he went to USC, and he has given a lot back to that school and that community. So there's the connection. But I still find it ironic.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I find it ironic that here in Chicago there was such a push for a water-based location. And that was the big hookup, and that was why the lawsuits were put in place, because it was the lakefront activists who didn't want that land developed. And then ultimately, he gets the museum in a spot where there is no water. So my point is, if you really wanted it in Chicago, then why were you willing to not get water in California, but you were not willing to go waterless in Chicago? So that's my only thing. I just wonder how much it really was meant to be here. I hope Chicago wasn't used as a negotiating tool, but who knows?
As leverage.
And I hope, and as leverage, because it would be, to me, not just because of Chicago's reputation, but I think it'd be unfair to people like you. You know, local Chicago Star Wars fans who were following this with legitimate interest and looking at it like, this is going to be great. I mean, my gosh, from somebody like you that lives here, the idea of a George Lucas, I mean, this had to be like your Super Bowl.
I was fighting for it.
Yeah.
We were marching outside of the Friends of the Parks.
There you go. Were you really?
Yeah.
Oh, how
and,
cool.
You know, we had built a coalition of people who really wanted the opportunity to find employment there.
Yeah.
The museum itself, the construction surrounding the museum, would have employed thousands over the course of 3 years. Then there would have been permanent positions established within the museum, which would have offered about another 1,000 positions.
Well, so first the Olympics, and then the Lucas Museum. Chicago, once again, takes one on the chin. But I did want to continue to talk to Jimmy McInerney here, about some Star Wars-related stuff, because, to your point, ever since George Lucas sold the Star Wars franchise and entity to Disney, it has certainly now become what used to be this kind of very, elusive thing. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the word is, delicate. Like, you don't even hear about Star Wars to now. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is in the news every week. There's a new movie that just came out, Rogue One. There's going to be another one coming out. There's going to be a big Star Wars land in Disney. I mean, they are going to make sure. They spent $4 billion, and they want a return on their investment.
I think they've already got
it. Don't you think they had to have already made it?
Yeah, I mean, at least through the merchandising
and
the two films that came out were huge box office
successes. So if there's any Star Wars expert, I have it in the studio with me right now. So after this break, we'll come back and talk a little Star Wars with Jimmy McInerney.
Yes.
I'm Jim Toronto, filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN. We'll be back right after this. No switching.
A special edition of The Beat. We are live from the United Center. Pre-game for the Blackhawks and the Canucks. My co-host will be the always entertaining Stanley Cup champion, former Blackhawk, Brent Sopel. We start the playoff push now. Join us on The Beat today at 3 on 720 WGN.
Do you suffer with chronic sinus infections? Symptoms may include facial pain, pressure above your eyes, below your eyes, sinus headaches. You might feel tired all the time. If this is you, you may also have heard of the Smart Sinus procedure, available only at Smart Sinus. It's a minimally invasive procedure done in the office.
From the franchise.
Yeah. So. And she already did film her scenes, though, for 8.
Yes.
So those are in the
back. We will see her this December.
So what did you think of Rogue One real quick?
Loved it. Loved it.
I'll tell you that. Everybody is talking. I haven't seen it yet, but from what I'm hearing is, I mean, this people have been comparing this to Empire Strikes Back.
It does have that same sort of grittiness and
which
tone.
Is usually considered the best of all the Star Wars movies.
It's character-driven, but not afraid to turn up full throttle on the action.
That's what I heard, yeah.
And I think it's a very clever film. I think it was brilliantly shot by Gareth Edwards, the director. And what makes it so impressive is you are stepping outside of the story of Luke Skywalker and all of those characters you're familiar with. Now, some of that stuff's bubbling under the surface in this film, and we do get Darth Vader.
Right.
So we are reminded of the Skywalker saga, but the focus is on these characters that are brand new and fresh to the franchise and really, really well fleshed out and very creatively brought to the silver screen.
Well, I have to think that a Star Wars fan, since Disney bought it, if there was any kind of wondering how they were going to do it. Certainly, Star Wars now is ubiquitous. It is everywhere. And so as a Star Wars fan, you got to love that. I'm with Jimmy McInerney. Jimmy Mack, thank you so much for taking time out on a Sunday for joining me and sharing some Star Wars info.
Elton, Jim, may the Force be with you.
Oh, yes. Very good. Back we will be after this. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning here at WGN. Trying to stuff 4 pounds of bologna in a 1 pound bag this morning. Hopefully doing a good job. Hope you enjoyed the show so far. And we will continue on for another about 45 minutes or so. And then we will go to a pregame. And then Northwestern will be taking on Ohio State in basketball. I am very pleased and very excited to have a longtime colleague who I literally probably have not seen. Maybe even since before the millennium.
It's true.
It may have been that long.
Yeah, it's true. And you look the same whatever you're drinking.
Thanks to Just for Men. But you look fantastic as well. I'm here with Dan Geyer, who is the film critic for the Daily Herald, as well as the president of the Chicago Film Critics Association, which I was a very proud member for several years, right at the beginning of it, back in the early 90s.
Yes.
When I was writing some film column for the Illinois Entertainer and also was editing a movie magazine called Inside Hollywood. And so I got to know Dan and went to many of the association's programs and, of course, their yearly, which we used to have like a whole big to-do.
It was a big to-do.
I mean, it was like a big deal.
And now it's a big to-done.
It's
over that. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there used to be an award ceremony.
Yeah.
And thanks to Dan and the Chicago Critics Film, the Chicago Film Critics Association, I got a chance to meet one of my all-time idols. It was great because there were some of the biggest stars in Hollywood came in to get their awards.
Oh, it's epic.
And so we got to schmooze with some
people like Spielberg coming in and Oliver Stone.
Well, I got to meet at the height of his Hannibal-ness. I got to meet Anthony Hopkins, who won the award
for Best Actor.
And he showed up to the award ceremony.
He did.
And so I was sitting at a table with him. I was a huge fan of the movie, and I've always been.
We should point out for those of you that were born after 1990.
Yeah, Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs.
Hello, Clarice.
You did that too well.
Well, here's the thing.
That freaky.
By the way, now, little styling. Well, the scary part was, so there's Anthony Hopkins, and I'm sitting alone with him at this table, and I'm interviewing him. And I said, well, it must be an amazing kind of ability to just morph into Hannibal Lecter anytime you want. And here was Anthony Hopkins, had a suit on, his hair was parted on the side, it wasn't slicked back. You know, he was Anthony Hopkins. He was just some guy. And he, when I said to you can morph into Hannibal Lecter, and he looked at me, and suddenly the face went dead. And he stared me in the eye and he goes, what do you mean? The hair on the back of my neck. I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm sitting across the table from a cannibal. I mean, it was that fast. he was able just to find that character and do it. And it was such a thrill of being such a fan of his and of movies to be sitting at a table with Hannibal Lecter. So if I owe you anything, it was the ability to meet him. But
well, there's a story behind that too, that I was never supposed to tell the public ever. But
there's the statute of limitations is done.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, we got a call from his publicist after that and said, in a panic, Mr. Hopkins has lost his lucky rabbit's foot. He won't win the Oscar without it. Can you check the hotel room?
Are you serious?
It happened, and I had no idea he was superstitious, but apparently he is. Now, so we searched everything, and we could not find his lucky rabbit's foot. Later on, I read in some magazine article that he believed in his lucky shoes. He had to have his lucky shoes.
Wow.
And I have no idea if somehow we got transposed. It was really his lucky shoes you were looking for. Oh, I saw the shoes. No, just kidding. But I just thought it was strange that that everything hinged on his win, hinged on his lucky.
I got news
for you. And I'm guessing he found it.
Yeah, I got news for you. That performance outshone any rabbit's foot.
Yes, well,
he didn't need any rabbit's foot for that.
Yeah, I don't think he was using rabbits to dine on anyway. So,
well, I wanted to talk to Dan because this Tuesday is the announcement for the Academy Award nominations. And so I wanted to have an expert, and I just found this out, which blows my mind, that you have been with the Daily Herald, and this is quite a tribute to you, especially in today's ever-changing newspaper business. You have been with the Daily Herald for 41 years?
That's correct.
Wow, that is something you should be proud of. And you've been a critic for how long, movie critic?
Well, since 78.
So almost 40 years there.
Close.
Yeah.
No, you promised there would be no math here.
Well, I know. Seriously? I know. I was trying to. I was going through carry the one. Yeah. Okay. But in my view, very few people with as much knowledge about movies on a daily basis. Obviously, this has been your life and your job for four decades. So I wanted to get to the main categories because they said on Tuesday, the 24th, what will you be doing when they make the announcements? What will you be doing?
I will be at a computer typing up stuff so that we can instantly translate that into something we can put on the internet.
So you'll get up at 7 o'clock? I mean, because it's 5 o'clock usually L.A. time.
Yeah, since you mentioned it, it's going to actually be released at a weird time, 7:18 our time. Central time, 7:18 a.m.
So if you are a movie fan, 7:18, you can go online and you'll probably begin to see some of the nominees. But Dan is going to look into his crystal ball here, his movie crystal ball, if you will, just like the Wicked Witch did.
Oh, there's one.
And where are you thinking for overall? What was 2016 in terms of movies? Good year, bad year? Where would you?
A lot of people hate it. It was fine. It had the appropriate amount of really, really good films, and at near the end in the last quarter, it kicked into high gear
as usual.
The idea, of course, being that Hollywood saves its most prestigious works for the late in the year because they're deathly afraid that the Academy voters will forget that something came out early in March or February, which might be a commentary on the median age of the voters of the Academy, that they can't remember stuff from February.
You know, that's a good point, too. We were talking about Silence of the Lambs. That movie came out earlier in the year.
Oh, not only earlier in the year, but you have a very good memory. Silence of the Lambs, speaking of that, came out on February 14th, the ideal Valentine's Day movie for everybody who wanted to go out on a first date.
It just goes to show you, though, how that bucked the trend, because there was a movie that was released, and the people didn't vote until the end of the year, and they still remembered how great that movie was and how great.
They didn't vote till the next year, technically.
That's true.
Anyway, the thing, and since you bring that up, it's impossible to describe exactly how the Oscar voters are going to go because there's always that extra element of chance, that extra monkey wrench that gets thrown into stuff. Things like the things that violate the general rules of thumb, as Silence of the Lambs did.
And they always do try to, they always seem to have a red herring. There's at least one, a lot of times the supporting actor or supporting actress category has always a far-off kind of nominee thrown in there that was not expected or not, nominated by the SAG Awards or by the Golden Globes.
And we have one of those, too.
Why don't we start? But very quickly, before we start with some of the names, what do you think about overall, as you make your picks, did you have to take into consideration the flack from last year with the lack of African-American nominees? Do you think that there will be an overcompensation this year to make up for that? And were there enough films to fill or to do that?
Well, yes and no. But you remember the basting that the Academy got last year from the public,
right,
and from African Americans particularly. And I was convinced that even though Spotlight was clearly the one that the Oscar people would normally vote for best film, I was convinced that they would go with the Revenant, because it was the only Oscar nominated film, best film, that had, you know, American Indians in it, had right. Native Americans.
Right,
so
right.
They, you know, at least right. they could have compensated for
right.
that. But no, I'm telling you, they went with Spotlight, which is as lily white as you can get as far as the entire cast and most of the crew.
Yeah.
And so my conclusion is that the Oscar voters simply are not going to be bullied into changing into a more sensitive or more diversified voting habits. It's just not going to happen.
So even though movies like Moonlight or Fences, which will be deserving, you don't think that they will be getting extra placement in a lot of the categories?
Well, at least they've gotten nominations. That's the first thing. Are they going to win? I don't think so.
So let me take a quick break here, and then we'll get into the supporting actor and actresses. Those are usually the first ones of the night, so we'll start that way. I've got Dan Geyer with me. He's the film critic for the Daily Herald. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards today. We will be back right after this. No switching. Hey, it's Jim Toronto back at WGN, here with Dan Geyer, the film critic for the Daily Herald. Let me quickly say this, that Kane and Taves battle Vancouver on home ice. Blackhawks, Canucks, tonight, 6:30. WGN TV Sports, where Chicago's very own plays. So we have Dan Geyer here from the Daily Herald, and we're talking about possible Oscar nominations, because the nominations will be announced this Tuesday, January 24th. And what time did you say on Tuesday?
It'll be 7:18.
7:18.
Now, the thing is that what they're doing this year, Jim, is they're ignoring the usual way. Every year they usually get at the Goldwyn Theater, and they
yeah.
get all those people together, and they
right.
just have these people come out and read off stuff. They're not going to do that this year.
Really?
It's all new. They're going digital.
Oh,
man.
Here we go.
Yeah, so what they're going to do is essentially they're going to not do the thing at the Samuel Goldwyn. They're going to just have a global live stream on the Academy's Oscar.com.
Really?
Oscars.org platforms.
So they're not going to have that audience there like the media would always be sitting there waiting?
Right. They're not going to have people standing around
wow.
looking like they're
bored. That is different.
No. So they're going full online here.
Yeah.
Oscar. So if you want the Oscars...
Or the Osco. You want to go to Osco?
Osco, sure. 7:18 Central on January 4th, Tuesday. Go straight to Oscar.com or Oscars.org.
Wow.
And also now, of course, ABC's Good Morning America will not be chiseled out of this. They will also
right.
be having the
yeah.
broadcast as well. It just will not be in the familiar confines of the Samuel Goldwyn Theater.
Okay, so let's go through the main categories and see where Dan Geyer gets into his crystal ball. So best supporting actor.
Now, the best supporting actors are, I'm going to read them in alphabetical order here.
Okay.
So
this is now these are your predictions.
Yeah, these are
oh great Garnack. Geyernack.
Okay. I'm not even. I try to pronounce this. It's Mahershala Ali,
right.
who did a phenomenal job as the dad figure / drug dealer in Moonlight. And then I think we're looking at Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water. We're looking at possibly Kevin Costner in Hidden Figures.
Really? Wow, there's a curveball. Field of Dreams reference.
Yeah, actually, it's pretty good. Maybe Hugh Grant will be number four.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And weirdly enough, Dev Patel, who has a huge part, he has a huge advantage over a lot of the other characters because he like is basically the main character for the last half of the movie, Lion.
In Lion, yeah. Wow, those are really, those are very different.
Now, here is the curveball.
Right.
Aaron Taylor Johnson from Nocturnal Animals, no one saw this coming that I could tell. He picked up a Golden Globe knob, so he could be a spoiler there. But there's something else, though, that needles into me, and that is there is this movie that doesn't do, you know, a lot of people didn't put on their top 10 list, Florence Foster Jenkins.
Yeah,
you know,
the Meryl Streep film.
Meryl Streep story based on the true story of the woman who couldn't sing and still
right.
managed to sing in
right.
opera at Carnegie Hall. Okay.
Yeah.
Simon Helbig, the
right.
guy from
Wolowitz.
Big Bang.
Wolowitz.
He is custom ordered to get a slot here at the supporting actor category because he's funny. He's totally different than anyone expects. It took me 30 seconds to go, where have I seen that guy before?
Right.
Because his transformation is so total. So basically, there are five and a couple of
girls. Wow, that would be wild if Wolowitz wins an Academy Award. Can you imagine him walking around the set of Big Bang Theory with an Oscar?
Wow. And you know what? They're nitty enough. The writers are nitty enough to figure out a way to get that in there.
Yeah. How about Best Supporting Actress?
Best Supporting Actress. Let's go with the alphabetical order, what I think might be the top five. We're looking at Viola Davis, justly deserved for her work in Fences. We're looking at Naomi Harris as the drugged-out mother in Moonlight. Nicole Kidman as the adoptive mother in Lion, Octavia Spencer in Hidden Figures, and of course, a big, big heavy hitter this year is going to be Michelle Williams, Manchester by the Sea. So those are my and then, you know, there's a possibility we could see Greta Gerwig in 20th Century Woman as a potential spoiler, although I don't think that's likely. So
if you had to pick a winner out of that, what would you pick?
Well, you know, the thing is, if I predict them now, I'm going to change my predictions
that's right,
later
okay.
because things change
but
a
I'm very impressed. I'm very I'm liking your picks are not as standard. I mean, you're starting to, you know, all the articles I'm reading, you're starting to just see the same names being regurgitated.
Well, no, these are kind of the same names, really.
Yeah, but a few. I mean, it will be interesting to see what happens at the SAG Awards next week because those are usually a little more of a portent to the Oscars than the Golden Globes. I don't really look at the Golden Globes as anything more than a boozy red carpet party.
That's why it's so popular.
Well, it's popular, but to me, it is not a precursor to the Oscars.
Well, the other thing about first of all, two things real briefly about the Golden Globes. Number one is they're sponsored by essentially international reporters who report on, you know, they're Hollywood foreign press. They report on the movies
right.
that come out of Hollywood. They kind of have a vested interest.
Exactly.
There's a slight little conflict of interest in doing that. Plus, they don't have any kind of credentials. They're not like the New York or Chicago or Boston film critics where you actually have credentials and you know what you're talking about.
And they're very starstruck.
And the other thing is, they put on a great show. But the other thing about it is that the Golden Globes also, in the major categories, they have twice as many nominees to pick from than the Oscars.
Yeah, they have the different comedies, ensembles.
Well, of course, they're going to be a little more, what do you call it, predictive because they have twice as many hits at the base. So, there we go.
I'm speaking with Dan Geyer here, who is the film critic for the Daily Herald. After the news, we're going to finish the main categories as Dan looks into his crystal ball and sees just how well he will do when the Oscars are announced this Tuesday, the 24th, at 7:18 a.m. Right now, got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. No switching. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We're talking Oscar predictions on Tuesday. The Oscar nominations will be announced at 7:18, as we were just told by Dan Geyer, who is the film critic for the Daily Herald. Welcome back, Dan.
Glad to be here. And by the way, that little ditty here, you know, the main theme from La La Land, the tune you just heard is going to win the Oscar for Best Song.
Oh, so, wow. Know. Listen to you. Very confident there.
No, absolutely.
Just, wow. No questions asked.
No. No, so
okay. Yeah. I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, the big thing. So,
well, let's write these down because I said the nominations are going to be announced on the 24th. So I thought it'd be fun to talk with Dan, get some of his picks. So let's talk about Best Actress.
Okay, Best Actress. We got a wide variety. In fact, we had a glut of really excellent candidates for this. Real briefly, I think the top five are going to boil down to this in alphabetical order. We're looking at Amy Adams for Arrival. We're looking at Isabelle Huppert for Elle. Natalie Portman for Jackie and Emma Stone, a dead absolute, gotta nominate La La Land. And number five, it's either going to be Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins. It could be Annette Bening for 20th Century Women. But there are two women I think are not going to get. I would love if they got on here, but they're not going to, I don't think. Taraji P. Henson, who is absolutely brilliant in Hidden Figures. She's funny. She's empathetic. She's smart. I love the way she played the character. Very underplayed. Wonderful performance. Henson, in, I hope that she gets it, but she probably won't. And then Rebecca Hall from a movie called Christine that no one saw, nobody remembered. One of the best performances of any actress this year. She plays an actual, real broadcaster, news broadcaster in Florida who commits suicide. Oh. It's a tragic tale. Not a great film. Terrific performance. So that's the actress.
Real quick, do you think that La La Land will be the runaway winner?
Right, at this point, I would say yes, because it's got an all-white cast.
Really? So they're going to buck the lack of African-American nominees once again. You don't think Moonlight's going to get it?
I don't think so at this point, no. And the other thing is, look, I'll tell you what, we don't have time for this right now, but in the week before the Oscars coming out on February 24th, I will write a piece explaining how the racism in Hollywood is so fundamentally in the bedrock of the foundation of this system that even African-American filmmakers are not aware of how they contribute to that.
Wow.
And I'll put that out, and that'll be a column.
Well, that is very
coming
good.
Up.
All right, so best actor.
Best actor. The five top nominees in alphabetical order, Casey Affleck, Manchester by the Sea, Andrew Garfield, Hacksaw Ridge. Wonderful performance. Ryan Gosling, La La Land, of course. Now, Viggo Mortensen in Captain Fantastic the movie is forgettable, but he is not. He keeps coming back and back and back again. And number five, of course, has to be Denzel Washington for his wonderful performance in Fences.
And Best Picture.
However, I should point out, the one guy who's not going to make it who should is Lewis McDougall from Monster Calls, a kid.
Wow.
Who was so amazing that he was so amazing. In his role, he was such a wounded soul, having a mother who's dying of cancer. I thought his performance outdid everyone else's. And wow. Then after I saw the film, I found out that a year before he made this film, his mother died.
So he drew upon that.
I think that's so. Okay, so movie. Top five possibly are going to be in alphabetical order. Arrival. Possibly Fences. Hacksaw Ridge. Hell or High Water. No. What am I talking about? No, wrong list. Boom, back up. La La Land, Manchester by the Sea, Arrival, Lion, and Moonlight. Those are the ones I think that are going to do
okay,
it.
Okay, well, we will That's write it. Those down and check those off. Thank you, Dan Geyer, for joining me. I'm sorry we have to rush out. We do have to get to a game here. I'm Jim Toronto, filling in for Dean Richards. Hope you had a good time today. I am here on business. I'm only here for fun. I hope to talk to you soon. Stay tuned for Dave Ennett. We're doing a pregame, and then Northwestern will be playing Ohio State. Have a good Sunday.